Academy 7, WABC.
WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bay.
We are New York, talking about what matters to you on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Walter M. Sterling.
Oh my gosh, 907 at WABC, following the fantastic, amazing, brilliant Cousin Bruce Morrow. Is this living the dream? Is there anything better than coming on the radio on the same station seconds after Cousin Bruce Morrow, the greatest radio personality in the history of New York? He is the Pope of New York radio. His kindness toward me and my family is epic. I am grateful to you, and happy Rosh Hashanah. I wish you every single thing that you want in the new year. Have a wonderful, peaceful evening. All right, what have we got for you tonight? You won't believe what we've got for you tonight. This is truly astonishing. You know about Action Park? Action Park in Vernon Valley, New Jersey. Well, if not, let me bring you up to speed.
My father probably should have been born in the 1850s. He was a really interesting, iconic guy who just loved to have fun. The amusement park he wanted to have was one where people controlled the action. Not where you just sat in a ride and it kind of took you around. He wanted one where you could control how fast you went, how high you went, and that's what he did.
Oh my gosh. I'm sitting there innocently watching an HBO movie, and I'm very hesitant to call it a documentary because a documentary always involves British people. This involves no British people. This is called Class Action Park. Class Action Park. The purpose of this park, in the eyes of the people who went there in Vernon Valley, New Jersey, was to get hurt. The appeal of the park was to get injured. Drunken teenagers going to an amusement park run by drunken teenagers. And their goal was to get hurt. In fact, if they went to high school on Monday and they said, yeah, we went to Action Park, and they said, well, where are your injuries? And they didn't have any injuries. They were sissies. Seth Porges, welcome to Sterling on Saturday on WABC. Seth is the producer, director, writer, creator of this astonishing movie called Class Action Park, about Action Park in Vernon, New Jersey. Seth, thank you so much.
Oh, it's great to be here.
All right, now listen, you need to tell us some of the key attractions at Class Action Park, because although at a distance, if you went there and you looked at the park, you'd see rides, slides, water parks, wave pools. You'd say, oh, this is a normal park. This is a normal amusement park. Until you look closer, they had a wave pool. Until you looked closer, they had a kayak ride. Until you look closer, why don't you share with us some of the more shocking things you discovered when you explored the phenomenon known as Action Park?
Of course. And, the thing you need to know about Action Park is it was one of the very first modern water parks that anybody had ever seen. When it opened in 1978, and it was opened until 1996, you only had a couple water parks. So the very idea of what a water park was sort of experimental. So everything they're putting to life, everything they're making, it was sort of the beta version of rides you would see elsewhere. So they hadn't really worked out the kinks. So you might go to a water park today and you'll see a big, steep water slide that puts you into a dark tube. Well, the one at Action Park does that, but that tube ends in a giant loop-de-loop as if you were going through a roller coaster. And there's all sorts of reasons that just didn't really work right.
Well, what were some of those reasons?
Oh, well, for one is, when you go into a roller coaster, you're strapped into a car, so they can control that experience. They can make sure that when you go in, you're going to come out intact. At Action Park, on a water slide like this, that's not necessarily the case. You take any five people, you put them through this tall, steep water slide that ends in a roller coaster style loop-de-loop. They have different body masses, different weights, different sizes, different amounts of friction, different amounts of wetness. All of these factors mean there was never a guarantee that somebody would actually make it through to the end. So when they first built this slide, the owner tested it out by first sending a couple test dummies down. Now, these test dummies came down in not the best state. They were missing heads, missing arms, decapitated, dismembered, but eventually they worked out those kinks. So the next stage in testing this ride was to send humans down. And in order to do this, what the owner literally did, he didn't go get some Navy test pilot. He basically went to the 14, 15, 16-year-old employees at the park, was waving $100 bills in the air, and said that anybody who had the guts to go down this monstrosity of a slide would be $100 richer. And so they send a couple of kids down, and the first couple of kids to come down, they have bloody mouths, and nobody's really sure why. Well, they open up the slide, and they find there just wasn't enough padding. So people were getting to the top. They were falling, face planting. They were getting hurt. So they go in, they add some more padding, then they send some more kids down. Well, these kids, their mouths are okay, but they have lacerations all over their body, and nobody's really sure why they have lacerations. So they open up the slide, and they find the teeth from the first group had gone embedded in the padding and was just eating into these children. And that was an attraction that people could go on. This was no normal water park.
No, it was not. And what's amazing about this to me is, what years was this open?
It was open from 1978 to 1996, so not that long ago.
Right. This was not in the 1890s when kids worked in factories. This was not when kids were working in factories. This was in the 1980s and 1990s. And there were two key factors that you mentioned. No, three. Alcohol. Teenagers were running it, but more terrifying, teenagers had designed many of the rides. And finally, these were the greediest guys on earth. This was venture capital Wall Street money run by, in my opinion, crooks. So crooks were running money into slides that could lead to permanent injury. Now, one of the things that stunned me about your movie Class Action Park was that it was a badge of honor to go there on a Friday, come to high school on a Monday, injured. Is that right?
Yeah, you got to earn your lumps in Action Park. You know, people would go to high school on Monday, and if you saw somebody just with a big old wound or friction burn from one ride called the Alpine Slide on their body, it was sort of taken for granted that they had just gone to Action Park. And people knew that when you went to Action Park, it was sort of expected that you were going to get hurt. And if you didn't get hurt, it means that you were... you didn't have the cojones to maybe go on some of the scarier rides, or maybe you were holding back. And what made these rides different was that, as that clip you played suggested, these are rides that were basically closer to something like skiing or skydiving than they were an amusement park ride. These are rides where you controlled your experience, whether it was how fast you went in a race car, how high you went, whatever it was. Very few of these rides were passive experiences. So it was definitely within the capabilities of somebody going to this park to push things farther than they ever should be able to, and indeed get hurt. And to top it off, yes, the employees there were very young and rather, let's just say, disinterested often in the behavior of the clients there.
Seth Rogers is the writer, director, producer of an HBO movie called Class Action Park, which was in Vernon, New Jersey. Vernon, New Jersey. And I'm Walter Sterling. This is WABC. And if you went to Action Park, I bet you have an exciting story. I bet you have a story that you haven't told anybody in a while for one reason. Nobody would believe you. Here's your phone number, 800-848-WABC, 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 your experiences at Action Park. Seth Rogers. Now, the coup de grace. Share with us the story about the kayak ride, the kayak lake.
Yeah, so this seemed on the surface like a very simple, somewhat tame ride. You basically get into a kayak and you go onto this body of water that had some fans that would kind of create very mild rapids. Well, one day, one gentleman went onto this ride and his kayak slipped, or he stepped out of the kayak, and he actually got electrocuted and ended up dying very tragically. And they ended up draining the ride. The park refused to accept responsibility, saying that that ride was not dangerous, but they said they drained it because the ride would be too intimidating to other people. But this is just one of many deaths at the park. The park was a very dangerous place. And I think the death count kind of almost obscures, which is about five or six, depending on how you count. I think that obscures just how dangerous it was, because on any given day, there would be literally hundreds of people injured a day on just one ride. The Alpine Slide alone would injure hundreds of people a day every single day. And this ride was basically a bobsled track. A lot of people think it was made of concrete or cement, but in fact, it was mostly made of asbestos. And you take a ski lift to the top, and you'd have this big kind of plastic metal cart, and you drive it down this track, and you would control your speed with this joystick handle. Well, the thing just wasn't designed all that well. So all day long, kids were going down this thing and just flying off and getting very, very seriously hurt. And to make that worse, much of the park was a water park, so people may not have been wearing a shirt or may have been in a swimsuit, and they just lose all their skin. And so that was probably the most common injury. Kids coming into school on Monday, half their skin is still at Action Park because of the Alpine Slide.
Kids would go to the park, to Action Park at Vernon, New Jersey, and lose a lot of their skin, and it was a normal event. In fact, you said in some of the rides, this happened every single time. All of it's amazing to me. Now, the topography of the park, also of Action Park in Vernon, New Jersey, the topography itself had one stunning, remarkable feature for an amusement park. Would you share that with us, please?
Well, are you talking about the highway? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, yes, the highway.
Okay. So typically when you go to a place like Disney World, there isn't a major highway running right through the middle of the park. Not so at Action Park. Route 94 ran smack through the middle of the park, separating Water World, which is where the water rides were, and Motor World, which is where your go-karts and your speedboats were. Now, in order to get between these two sections of the park, you would take this real kind of rickety, janky monorail-type contraption over it. And I think it didn't work all that well. We actually spoke to somebody, it wasn't included in the movie, who was on this ride when it broke down, and they told us that their monorail thing caught on fire, and they had to jump down in traffic onto Route 94 from, you know, 10 or 15 feet above. So you don't find that at Disney World.
No, there's nothing here that you would find at Disney World. Now, what was stunning about every single thing is that every ride was mostly broken. In addition to every ride being inherently dangerous, you know, a loop-de-loop that was pitch black and sent you on a 360, every single thing was mostly broken. The water slides that you sat on some sort of contraption and you should have been able to break it or steer it, nah, that didn't really work. Did you go to Action Park? We're talking to a brilliant movie guy who made both a hysterical and tragic film called Class Action Park, about Action Park in Vernon, New Jersey. Seth Porges is on Sterling on Saturday on WABC. I can't get it out of my mouth because I can't believe any of the things that I saw. Class Action Park is on HBO right now. But we will talk to you at 800-848-WABC, 800-848-WABC. And when you call in, I will give you a Brucey Bit question, and you could win a prize announcement. I'm Walter Sterling, and this is 77 WABC.
The 77 WABC mobile app. Download it now. We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Walter M. Sterling.
The Alpine Slide was a terrifying thing. It was essentially a giant track to rip people's skin off that was disguised as a children's ride.
I always got a skin burn on the Alpine Slide.
If you don't know what the Alpine Slide was, it's this long cement track that you'd be on, and this little device with wheels on it.
Every sled seemed to either be broken in a way where you couldn't use the brakes at all, or where it was just locked in the brake position. You're either going to careen down this thing at full speed with no ability to control it, or you're going to be going dreadfully slow and someone at full speed is going to crash into you from behind.
Jack, you're on WABC talking about Action Park in Vernon Valley, New Jersey, with the producer, director, creator of Class Action Park, which you can see right now on HBO. Hello, Jack. Jack, hi. Where did you go?
Hello?
Yeah, Jack, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You're on the air.
Okay, so I go there in 1986 with a bunch of friends of mine, my girlfriend at the time, and we were on the Grand Prix race cars, and she winds up running over one of the monitors of the track. Everybody comes flying off. The car goes flying into a bush, and she really messed up the guy's ankle. They were kind of looking for us to try to get somebody in trouble. So we quickly left and headed back to Long Island before anything really became of it.
You're the only person who ever thought that Long Island was a safe retreat.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, Jack, you're the best. Thank you very much for calling. Would you like to guess a Cousin Brucey bit for a chance to win a prize announcement?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
All right, you're good. We appreciate it, Eileen. Welcome to WABC. You and I are talking to Seth Porges, writer, director, producer of Class Action Park on HBO right now.
Okay, hello. I'm ready
Eileen,
for my
fantastic
question.
Fantastic to talk to you. Fantastic to talk to you. Hi.
Happy to talk to you, too. I love these
turn off
two
your radio,
shows.
Okay, turn off your radio, Eileen. Turn off
oh,
your
okay.
Radio.
Sorry about that.
You're sure, it's okay.
Hold on, literally. Okay, how's that? Can you hear me now?
I always heard you. It was just I heard you three or four times. But welcome. Welcome to WABC. Hi, Eileen.
Thank you. How you doing?
Eileen, I feel so much better now that I've had dinner and I'm talking to you.
I feel the same way. And I love this show, Cousin Brucey and Walter. Oh, I love it.
Is that great? We're going to make that into a promo. What you just said now, Cousin Brucey and Walter, my life is complete. My dreams are fulfilled.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
All right. You're talking to Seth Porges, who made this astonishing movie about Action Park in Vernon, New Jersey. Do you have something to say?
I've never been there, but I've heard about it.
What'd you hear?
Let's see. When did I move to Lawrence Park?
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
Anthony, you're on WABC at 800-848-WABC, 800.
Yes, sir. How you doing? Am I,
WABC. Yes, sir. Hi.
Yes, sir. Good evening. I'm listening to your show. I have a little story about the water park, and I'm going back to maybe the late 80s or early 90s. I can't remember the name of the ride itself, but the producer of the movie will probably know the name. Those two big, gigantic vertical slides. It was in the
That's
water
a super
park.
Speed
remember
slide
those things?
What that is. Super speed slides.
Yeah, they were two big slides side by side. I forgot, what was it? What was the name of those? That thing?
Super speed slide.
Okay, that was it. I remember one of those things was not covered. And that first, let's say, 25, 30 feet, I mean, that was a straight vertical drop without any cover. All you had to do was panic and bend at the waist, and you were flying right out of that thing.
Absolutely. That had a canopy at the top eventually just to keep bodies from flying up. And you've seen rides like this at other water parks that are effectively nearly straight down. But this one was so much taller and so much steeper than any of those. And it had a more dubious reputation, which is that it tended to, shall we say, give people a large amount of water into various cavities. And everybody they basically called it the enema maker is what it was called.
Exactly. That was just my two cents on the infamous Action Park of the water park. And by the way, that was an excellent little poke you gave to that other guy about the only guy thinking Long Island was a safe retreat. I like it. That was good.
I appreciate it. Listen, I have to thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
All right. Now listen, Seth Porges. You are a great filmmaker, movie maker. Did I say film? A great movie maker. You wrote a terrific movie. You produced it. You directed it. You apparently ate your partner. We have heard nothing about him. And we didn't see him in the movie. Nothing. But Seth, thank you so much for being on Sterling on Saturday. If somebody wants to send you a note after they see the movie, how can they reach you?
Yeah, so on social media, we're at Class Action Park on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're easy to find there.
All right. Thank you so much for being on WABC. It's 9:29 with Walter M. Sterling. The next half hour, there's only one thing that we could possibly do, and that's talk about Jersey. The next half hour, we're going to talk about Jersey, the very special cultural icons in the state of New Jersey, because it goes far beyond Action Park. It goes far beyond any of the things that we've discussed. And when you call in, if you would like to win a prize announcement, all you have to do is guess a Brucey bit. That's right. Guess a Brucey bit. Guess the answer. and you could win a prize announcement. There's no other show quite as spectacular as this. What else have I got for you? All right, plus, we have Vic Ferrari, a retired New York City police detective who has a police bar story, a real cop story. I love those stories, don't you? They're incredible. And what else do I have? I just have too much to do. I have just too much to do. All right, I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is 77 WABC. And coming up, Vic Ferrari's True Detective Stories. And we have Drive-Thru Brew. And we have Why I Hate Public Radio. Coming up in seconds, 77 WABC.
WABC.
An American original. Talk Radio 77 WABC. And WABCRadio.com. We are New York. Talking about what matters to you on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Walter M. Sterling.
You know, like a 15-year-old from Long Island walking around with a Budweiser can was not frowned upon at all and very common.
Everyone involved in running the place seemed to be a combination of teenaged and drunk or completely apathetic.
The employees at the park were just young local Vernon kids, and like they smoke a bowl and then they come to work and then they're like, yeah, go ahead, next.
Like most disc jockeys. Mike in Miami,
hi,
welcome to Sterling on Saturday. Hi, Mike.
Hi, I'm calling from Miami, from Aventura, Florida.
Yes, now I know about Aventura. Now let me discuss this with you for a moment. The most expensive mall in South Florida is the Aventura Fashion Mall. Is that correct?
I believe so. I'm blind. I've been there before. But it is pretty expensive.
And what did you buy there?
I've gone to the Cheesecake Factory, and I've gotten some perfume and different things.
Please explain to me and everybody, why is it at the Cheesecake Factory that they have not learned that cheesecake must be served at room temperature? Why do they serve it frozen? Isn't that disturbing?
I guess. I never really thought about that.
Now you will devote the next 3.5 days to thinking about that, all right, Mike?
Right.
All right, Mike?
Right.
Now, how may I be of service to you?
Well, you're doing a great job. You're my kind of talk show.
Thank you.
You're doing a really good job. I enjoy your show very much. I've been on the campaign trail dealing with the pandemic as a blind person. It's very difficult.
One of my engineers, one of my sound engineers, is a man named Jim Kelly. And
right.
Jim Kelly is also blind, and he does phenomenal work. Now, here's a good trivia question just for you about Cousin Brucey.
Okay.
Through most of his years at WABC, he had a blind engineer. Do you know what his first name was, the blind engineer?
No.
Okay. His name was Bobby, and Bruce used to tell stories about how Bobby would sometimes show up at work bloody, because he'd run into things, bump into things, he'd get mugged, but darn it, he was going to get to work. Now, that's a whole lot of stuff that's not about you. How can I help you, Mike?
Well, I just want to thank you for your great show, and I grew up listening to WABC back when they were a rock station with all of the great disc jockeys, and it's great to hear Cousin Brucey on the air again.
Thank you very much for your call, Mike. I really appreciate it. We all grew up with this radio station, and thank God for John Katz for saving it from the trash heap, for shining it up, coating it with gold, putting real talent on the air, and letting us do our job, and not to mention the most beautiful control board I have ever seen. Joel in Asbury Park, welcome to WABC. Hello, Joel.
Hi, Walter. You're doing a great job, and I wanted to find out what your summer memories are of the Jersey Shore, whether it was Asbury Park, Long Branch, Atlantic City, Point Pleasant, or, you know, any of the number of other places, Seaside Heights. I mean, I know a lot about Asbury Park area, and I grew up there, and I just remember tremendous, of course, the Stone Pony and all the things that go on at the Palace Amusements,
Joel,
Convention Hall.
Joel, tell me the truth.
Yes.
did you actually go to the Stone Pony?
Absolutely, yeah.
There's so many iconic places in our lives, in our culture, that people talk about, but then I drill down and I say, did you really go there? Did you? But you actually went. Was it like a crummy bar, or was it kind of cool?
It was kind of cool, but they recently, in recent years, expanded it into like a real summer stage. So it's a lot more outdoors. That's connected to what used to be just the indoor only part. But, you know, what do you remember? I don't know where you go to the Jersey Shore. What part do you go to when you go down there?
I will tell you exactly, and I want to thank you very much for the call. Thank you for the call at 800-848-WABC, 800-848-WABC. This is what I remember of the Jersey Shore. We went to Long Beach Island, and when you get off the causeway going to Long Beach Island, you can turn left or right. If you turn right, it's not as good news as turning left. If you turn left as you go further down till you hit Love Ladies, that's where the really rich houses are. That's where the $6 million on the beach houses are. You go from Bernardsville to Love Ladies on the beach. That's pretty much that route. We did not do that. We had a more bizarre relationship with Long Beach Island. When we got off the causeway, we kept driving straight, not a little to the left, not a little to the right, straight, right into what? Beach Haven. And the Beach Haven homes are about the size of a pack of cigarettes. We would drive in. We were about 80 houses from the beach. Next to us was one of my cousins. Either my Aunt Rose or Aunt Claire would rent a house. And we'd be a house or two from them. My mother's genius. Listen to me carefully. My mother's genius, she would never share a house with a relative or any other family or anybody. We had our own house, and our cousins had their own house. And then we would share corn on the cob at benches outside with them in a communal situation. But we would not share houses. This insanity of sharing a vacation home to me strips away the joy of a vacation home. And what is the joy of a vacation home? The joy of a vacation home is you can walk around in your underwear. You can snore as loud as you want. 800-848-WABC. And then, remember the mosquito spray? What was it? The methylene, whatever it was. We'd sit there outside eating food while this giant mosquito sprays would go by. And we were told over and over it was safe, like Christy Todd Whitman told us that 9/11 was safe, no problem. Pay no attention to this. Rich in New Jersey, welcome to 800-848-WABC, 800-848-WABC. We're talking about Jersey because, you see, when I said tonight, whoever thought Long Island would be a respite, a place of safety, nobody ever gets to say that. Everybody on New York radio says, yay, Brooklyn, go Brooklyn, or I grew up on Long Island. You know, I like Long Island. Nobody says, I grew up in Jersey. That's where I'm from. Taylor's Ham, screw you. Hi, Rich. You're on WABC. Rich, hi. Hello, Rich. Can we talk? Well, that's tragic. He's gone. I gave him such a good setup. You played at the Stone Pony, Daniel. You played at the Stone Pony. What was
when
that
I was
like?
A teen and in my 20s, trying to be a rock star. It was fun, yeah. My drummer actually got to book a few gigs there, like the lineup for the shows, a couple times. I was a knucklehead, though. I got thrown out of there for fighting.
Now, what were you fighting for? Why would you fight at the Stone Pony, the iconic place?
We were at a punk rock show. It was pretty, you know, I got rough in there.
It got rough. Now, but, how did it get rough? Were you fighting over drugs? What was the deal?
Oh, no, no. So, the kids were dancing, and somebody clobbered my friend by accident, and then they started fighting him, so I had to stand up for him. The bouncers just saw us fighting, and they kicked all of us out, though, you know?
And Daniel
and they knew me because I played there, and they were like, you're never allowed in here again. But that was in my 20s. I was back there to see shows after that. But it was a good, great club back in the day. I haven't been there in years, though.
But to a woman, what is hotter than to say to her, I am forbidden from playing at the Stone Pony?
And she'll go, I didn't make a big deal out of it because there was plenty of places to play back then.
You're so bad. Oh, you're so bad. Oh, my gosh.
We played in New York then and then Connecticut after that. But I always loved the local places, too. And the Clash Bar was great, too. That just closed recently from I think it was in Passaic or Patterson. Or no, it was in Passaic, I think.
What do you play? What do you play?
I played bass guitar and eventually lead guitar in a couple bands, but we never got famous. Just played hard rock, heavy metal, punk rock kind of stuff. But it was fun. It was a fun ride.
What Jersey town did you grow up in?
I was from Belleville, actually.
Belleville?
Oh, yeah.
Belleville.
Belleville was quite an experience. Yeah, it was like another planet, maybe.
Why was that?
No, I don't know. Maybe we were smoking too much back then. I don't know.
Listen, but isn't it true that having grown up in New Jersey, that people from Brooklyn sort of make you feel inferior because, Brooklyn, we're from Brooklyn. And I'm like,
I guess. In a way, but I always dug New York, too. You can't help but love New York. It's a bugged out place. It never really changes, but it never stays the same. And they're always up. They don't sleep, so that's good for me.
Yeah, that's
sometimes
the key.
Sometimes I can't sleep either.
Yeah, that is the key. Now, would you like to guess a Brucey bit? Would you like to guess a Brucey bit for a chance to win a prize announcement?
Nah, I'm good. I got to get going, actually. It's a little late for me.
What do you mean it's late? So your rock days are over at 9:46. Your rock days are over if it's late for you.
Yeah,
thanks for that call,
Daniel. I'm thinking it's like, oh, geez, look at the time. It's almost 10.
That's so sad. All right, Daniel, thanks a lot. Yeah. John and Fresh Meadows. Fresh Meadows, welcome about to WABC. Hello, John.
Hi. Yeah, I lived in Hillsborough, New Jersey, South Somerville, for 6 years, from 82 to 88, the best years of my and my family's life.
Which begs the question, why were they the best years?
Well, it was perfect because we moved from Queens to a little condominium location where my kids were 2 years old and 4 years old, and my wife could just let them out and have a fun time in the countryside. There was a spring going through our condominium area, and we came from Howard Beach, living on a bus street. And there was no way we could let the kids out at that time, but we moved to New Jersey, and that was part of the highlights.
And the pizza is the best.
Hey, the pizza.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
All right, 947 at WABC, 800-848-WABC, 800-848-WABC. Joanna in Comac, welcome to Sterling on Saturday. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say thank you for having a thing about human resource people, because my name is Johanna, and I just wanted to say thank you, because you made me laugh, because I had a lady that stood up against everything that a human resource lady should be for the workers' rights. So you just made me laugh one day when you had the whole thing about
Johanna. Listen, let me remind you of what I was talking about. You mentioned about human resources and about how I talk about human resources. These are the scum of the earth. Human resources people are the worst humans on earth because they live a lie. They are bad people because they live a lie. And here's the lie. They present themselves and are told to present themselves and are paid to present themselves as your friend. Come to me if there's a problem. Share with me your thoughts. And then you go to them, you share your thoughts, and it's a direct pipeline to the chief executive officer of the company. And there's a reason for that. Do you know what that reason is?
No.
By law, they must, thanks to Sarbanes-Oxley, they must tell the CEO of the company of anything you tell them. And corporate lawyers are different. Like, if you've got a real problem, it's better to go to the corporate attorney than it is to go to the human resources person because of something that I said before.
I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it.
Which is this. Nobody in high school ever said, you know what? I've got to go work in human resources. Nobody ever said that. There is not. People in high school say, I want to be a fireman. They say, I want to be a mom. they say, I want to be a dad. But nobody ever says, you know, I want to work in human resources. Also, nobody ever says, I want to be a venture capitalist. It never happens. They might say, I'd like to make some money, but they never say, you know, I want to be a venture capitalist. No, no. And I believe, right to my toes, that if you are in a job that you did not dream about in high school, you did not fantasize about in high school, you are ultimately corruptible. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday. Coming up in just seconds, Florida stories, because where do all of us wind up? Where do all New Yorkers, all New Jerseyites wind up? Where do we wind up? In Florida. This is 77 WABC.
The 77 WABC mobile app. Download it now. We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Walter M. Sterling.
The great Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective with a real cop story.
You're a dinosaur, Sipowicz.
I'm a dinosaur.
You jeopardize that collar because it sticks in your throat on first grade.
It sticks in my throat, how you got it?
Every white guy in the department with second grade thinks he should have gotten my grade promotion. Half of you guys think I got it on my back.
Hey, Walter, let me tell you a great story from my new book, Grand Theft Auto, the NYPD's Auto Crime Division. So when I was a detective working in auto crime, a lot of the body shops and salvage yards, although they were legit businesses, would take in stolen vehicles and take in stolen parts, you know, as a side business, because it's found money. Anytime someone brings them something that's stolen, all they got to do is take the stickers off and slap it on a car, and they're not paying for the parts, but they bill the poor customer as if they purchased parts to repair the car. So anyway, there's a lot of different ways to get a search warrant for a salvage yard or a junkyard. And that's, you know, either through an informant telling you that there's stolen property in there, or you personally observe a stolen vehicle going in there, or you do an inspection and you spot something in there. And then what you do is you take that information to a district attorney who will write a warrant for you to go in there to look for stolen parts, tools, business records, etc. So there was a guy we used to work with. He was a good guy, but a little different, you know, a little particular about things. And the way he used to get search warrants for these body shops, and we couldn't figure out what the hell he was doing. He would go into a junkyard. He would ask if, you know, he could come in and take a look around the premise. He'd bring a little scoop with him in a baggie, and he'd start taking dirt samples. So we started calling the guy Joe Dirt, because he got an NYPD detective going into these junkyards and taking soil samples and leaving. So we used to bust his balls and call him Joe Dirt. Well, what he would do is he would send these dirt samples off to the EPA, and they have a lab there, and then the ground would test positive for, you know, oils and antifreeze. And so the way his way to get into these junkyards and body shops were, he would test their soil, and he'd come back with a search warrant and you know, knock these guys' brains in. I mean, you know, actually, he had a better idea than we did, because a lot of times if we asked to look around and look at parts, they would tell us, no, get the hell out of here, come back with a warrant. When he used to walk in and said, hey, you mind if I get some of your soil? Yeah, no problem, come on in. So that's how the legend of Joe Dirt was spawned in my new book, Grand Theft Auto, the NYPD's Auto Crime Division.
957 at WABC. And where do all New Yorkers wind up? We all wind up in Florida.
For New York's information and entertainment station, WABC, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories. We're going to North Fort Myers, Florida. 27-year-old woman has a house on the lake, and it's really nice, except the trees on her property line have to be trimmed, and she was out there cutting them up, and an alligator sneaks up on her. This isn't a little one either. This is a 10-foot-long alligator, and it gets close enough to her before she notices that when she sees, she tries to run away. She slips. It grabs her foot. The shoe stops it because it's just like the little end of the gator snout, and when he lets go to try and get a better grip, she pulls her foot up, and then she's rolling, and the gator comes and tries to bite her and just scratches her back, and then she pops up and runs in the house. She's going to be fine. She had to go to the hospital and get some stitches and whatnot. But living in Florida, Just trimming your trees in the backyard is serious business. Florida Stories is a Spring Rock Media production. Find me on Twitter at James Parker Show. For New York's information and entertainment station, WABC, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
I'm Walter Sterling. Great to be with you. Here's my email address. Every single email I get gets answered. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Now, possibly they'll say, Walter, we're going to stick with you for a while, and they might give me a WABC email. But until then, it's WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com, which I mentioned because Google needs more publicity. Isn't that right? Then I do have a webpage, and on that webpage you will find information about my podcast and about Florida Stories, and you'll be able to sign up for your Midnight Misfit membership card. Because if you're listening to the radio right now, and if you're listening to me at all, you don't fit in. You're like Tesla. You will live your life brilliantly, but very alone. It's Walter Sterling Show. That's the webpage, Walter Sterling Show. Now, is this exciting? Is there anything better than coming on after Cousin Bruce Morrow, the Pope of New York radio? I am so grateful to Chad Lopez and David Labrosi. This is what radio is supposed to be. We're supposed to be anxious to come to work and generally anxious overall because we might get fired. That's the whole message. That's the whole drama of radio. No, really, it's great. We have the best time.